97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
This is Kristen Heemster with the Art of Potential show, and we have such an exciting show for you. It's something you probably have thought about your whole life, which is if you were uber wealthy, like you had all the money in the world, what would you need? And we have an expert on that. We have Teresa Lee. She is a household and property manager for the uber wealthy. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, Kristen.
So, Teresa, tell us a little bit about your business.
Because I'm dying to know, because I may have that money one day and I need to know what I don't know.
Well, I'm a risk manager. Primarily, we work with clients across the United States. And it's kind of a name that disguises what we do, really, is because we work with wealthy clients. Most of their wealth is $50 million liquid and up. And for those...
Yeah, that's just like all of us in Chapel Hill, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, for those of us who work with the uber wealthy, when we use the term $50 million liquid, it refers to investable assets. Mm-hmm. So it's not property,
right,
or art. It's literally money that is invested. So $50 million liquid and up. What do we do for clients? Well, it's a quirky little niche business that I have. I am hired primarily as an advisor to sit with them and help them to problem solve issues that they have in their homes.
And I'm sure that they have different issues in their homes than I have in my home. So what would be a problem that they may have that maybe I wouldn't have so much?
A lot of it is communication.
Oh, interesting. We have that in my home, too. I'll just go ahead and say that.
A communication issue. The wealthy are different. And wealthy is a big term, but for those of, you know, the clients that we work with, when I am talking about communication issues, their lives are moving so fast that they have a tendency to forget. And so a really good situation.
Dang, we have a lot in common. That's all I'm saying.
They forget what they've said to someone, and for the layperson or a worker who may be working for them or as a subcontractor or a vendor, they remember that. And so if they place an order for something, the client says, oh my gosh, no, I didn't place that order. Relationships fall apart. We work with staff, their household staff. We have clients that have over 15 people that work only for them. And they work in
different
households.
So one person has 15 people working in their household for them.
Yeah, multiple households. So they...
Okay, so they have multiple houses where they have to have multiple staffings. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, I'm hoping for one staff. I just want to put that out there. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so we help them to understand job titles, salary ranges, benefits, to help them to be realistic about what it costs, because what they don't understand sometimes is that how many people does it take really to run these households? Many of these households are 15, 20,000 square feet. They have multiple houses. It takes a lot of people to keep them up and running. Mm-hmm. So I'm hired to sit down with them to come up with operational budgets, which is kind of a joke because for them, there is never a budget. It's kind of what they want when they want it. But they do like an outline.
Unfortunately, sometimes I feel that way too. But anyway...
Yeah. So, you know, we're hired to help them, really, to solve a lot of problems that they might be able to solve themselves if they could just slow down.
Right, if they had the time to do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have to ask, one of my favorite things about this show, about the Art of Potential show, is finding out how people ended up where they are. And this, like you said, it's just a unique niche that you found. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you didn't wake up when you were five and play, you know, let me help the rich people game. I mean, you probably played something else. How did you end up here?
Interestingly enough, I am the only child of a British mother and a father who was a naval intelligence officer. And so when I got ready to graduate from college and I was so psyched about going to college because I knew higher education is what it was all about. And I went to my dad and I said, okay, Dad, you know, like I'm ready to go. And, you know, here's the calendar and this is when they need a check. And I was just so excited.
Mm-hmm. I totally understand that. I work with teenagers all day. You're so excited. Here's college. Yeah. I'm ready to go. Yeah. I'm ready to get out. And especially as an only child, you probably had some more attention than you actually want anyway.
Yeah. So my dad sat down with me and, you know, I won't forget this. My dad said, well, you know, here's the moment when I'm going to, you know, teach you and let you build some personal character. And I was waiting for the story. My dad was a great storyteller. And he said, I'm going to let you pay for your own college.
And I'm sorry, when did you find out that was how that was going
to? Yeah, so it was 3 weeks before, you know, schools get ready to start. And of course, you know, it was years ago. And then, you know, you could write the check literally as you were stepping into school there, you know, you could, I was already.
Yeah, if you had the money. Yeah. In other words, if you had backed it and said, mm-hmm. oh, okay, my, you know, it's good to know this is heading down the pipeline, I can prepare for
right.
it. But, okay.
Right. Yeah, but he had planned that all along. You know, he knew it was coming, and I think that it was his way of, for whatever reason that he wanted to do. And he said, I'm going to let you pay for your own college. I wasn't prepared for that moment, and I had to take a little back step there, and I was really mad at my dad for a really long time, and I was not unlike every teenager today trying to figure out who I was.
Right.
Who was I? Where was I going? What was I meant to? You know, surely someone had the answer. It was too late to apply for grants or loans.
Yeah, and so 3 weeks before school.
Missed out on that. And so I had to figure out how to take care of myself because my father was also not into supplying me with money. And so I had to figure out how to put myself through college and pay for my own bills. And my father said, you know, Teresa, he said, you have been raised in a household where you already have a skill set that you're not even aware of. And you know, the only thing I knew that I was good with was horses and dogs and didn't know, you know, if there was a job for that. But my dad said, no, that, you know, you have been raised in a household where etiquette and protocol was an everyday occurrence. Writing thank you cards, knowing how to speak to people. My father, at the age of 4, was teaching me how to shake a hand. And I was raised, and I didn't realize that it was a different kind of a household. And he said, you know, go out there and you'll find a job. Someone will give you a job. And I went literally and knocked on people's doors because I didn't know any different.
Right.
And
by the way, I just have to interrupt you for a second because according to What Color Is Your Parachute by Nelson Bowles' great book, that is actually the best way to find a job. I know you want to sit behind your computer and look, but actually that's not so good. But knocking on doors, just like Teresa said, that's actually the best way. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. I did know that. Thank you. This is radio and you can't see me. I'm all of 5'1" and I'm
super cute.
I'm very little. And so I would scope out rich neighborhoods and I
genius
would go up and knock on the door. And sometimes people wouldn't answer. But when they did, I would say, hi, my name is Teresa Lee and I'm looking for a job. And when I did get a response, people would say, what can you do? And I would say, well, I show up on time and, you know, I just whatever you need. Long story short, I got this job with this guy and he was single and he said, what can you do? And I said, well, but this time I was exhausted. And I said, well, I'm pretty good with dogs. And he said, okay. And I walked his dogs. I did errands. I cleaned up after the dog. I did whatever needed to be done.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about how Teresa ended up in this industry. And I'm sure you'll find a lot of parallels with your own life in different ways. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra, and you are listening to The Art of Potential Show. We are having a fascinating interview with Teresa Lee. She is a household risk manager for the uber wealthy, and we're finding out how she ended up in this job. It's absolutely fascinating story. So, Teresa, you were just telling us you went door to door in a nice neighborhood. You banged on the doors. You said, "Hi, I'm Teresa Lee. What do you need? Because I can do it." Some guy said, "Come take care of my dogs." And you ended up working for him, it sounds like, for how long?
8 years.
8 years.
8 years. Yeah, I was in school. I was on the 8-plus-year plan.
Well, when you're paying for your own school and you have to pay as you go, yeah.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Whatever works. So what I realized as I was getting close to graduating, it was an epiphany, and I won't forget it. I was standing at the job board at the senior center there at the University of Kentucky. They have a board for seniors graduating, and they listed the jobs in which I was majoring in.
What did you major in?
I majored in agriculture economics.
Yeah. Okay.
And marketing. And the salary at the time was a fraction of what I was making in service. And I remember the air leaving my body going, "Oh, Lord, what have I done to myself?" And realized that it was a turning moment. It was literally at the point where I felt myself turn and spin on my heels going, "Whoops, okay, we have to make a U-turn here and go in another direction." And I stayed in service. I realized that I had a knack for it, but school taught me so much. It gave me the ability to realize that there were so many different answers to one problem, that surrounding yourself with people who were smarter than yourself was the best thing that you can do. If you need an answer, it's out there. So school really helped me, and it helped me to be better at my job. And so I launched into going into service. And for those of you, you can do a little Google search. Private service is an industry of people who serve those who own homes or properties who need staff. And there's actually a tier in the sense that there are 50 different job titles, believe it or not, for private service. And it's done by experience and ability to deliver. And so you go from being like a grunt PA, which is what I was, to a personal assistant, to an executive personal assistant. And then you can add different kind of job skills like secretarial or bookkeeping. Mm-hmm. And you have a term called household manager in private service. And what it means is someone who can manage a large home. And usually that it means 7,000-10,000 square feet. In our industry, household manager tends to focus on just the interior, entertaining, linens, being able to host a party. Estate manager is the step up. It's one of the highest levels that you can go, and it means multiple households the couple, and multiple staff, inside and outside expertise. That means lighting, irrigation, driveways, gates, security, every system inside of the internal external part of every house. That's the estate manager. And so when I ended my career, I was working for one couple. I actually landed here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Those of us in service have a tendency to move around the country. And I was working for one couple. They had three different properties here in the North Carolina area, and I had 22 employees that worked for just them. And we had a lot of moving parts. And it was a situation where...
Most small businesses are struggling to even have, a few employees. And these are just families that have 22 employees. Yeah. It's a lot of moving parts.
I don't even think that television or movies ever does private service justice, because it is a ballet.
Yeah.
Of service that goes on. For instance, in the houses, the families that I work for instance, if a family was sitting down to dinner, they were generally served.
Yes.
Someone would be within earshot if they wanted something. When they rose from the table, everything was just done. It just happened.
Right.
I can remember getting phone calls from my employer saying, "Teresa, where are my shoes? Where are a particular type of shoes?" He was a gentleman who was quite— fastidious about his appearance, and I had to have in my mind his wardrobe.
Yeah, because that was his thing.
Everything, where everything was. And, you know, that's really great, and I did really well for this family, and it was kind of one of those situations where it was time for me to make a change. And so I was in Raleigh, and I left them, and I had an opportunity to work for James Kimsey in McLean, Virginia, and I went up there to spend some time with him, and he had 22,000 square feet. He was one gentleman. And, you know, Kristen, I just made a decision that I was single, I didn't have any children, and I had given my life to service. And I just thought, you know, if I'm going to have a family, if I'm going to have people around me, I'm going to have to stop moving. And I'm going to have to focus on my own personal life.
Yeah.
So I decided not to take the job with Mr. Kimsey and to stay in Raleigh. Poverty came and chased my skirt pretty quickly because
that felt good, I'm sure. No. I mean, it's just so interesting because you're living, like, you're seeing these people. I don't, if you've been around McLean, Virginia, it's a suburb of D.C. It is an expensive area. So if you're looking at 22,000 square feet, God only knows, you know, what that estate would have been. But if you're going from that to, you know, being chased by poverty, you're just straddling two radically different worlds.
Very true. Yeah, but, you know, I think that it's just like it's not like any other job, but I think that I've learned to separate my job from my personal life. And I was taught very differently because what is theirs is theirs. What is mine is mine. And I didn't, I was lucky because I wasn't envious because I could see that money did not buy you happiness.
And you would have seen that firsthand. I mean, you would have been right there in the midst of that.
Oh, yeah. It actually just gives you a new set of problems. A lot of my clients now are new money. Mm-hmm. They may have invented something, designed something, sold something. So they go from working class people to 100 million liquid. Mm-hmm. We have a new family out in Los Angeles, and that's the situation. And I just had dinner with them in Venice Beach not very long ago. And they said, what is going on here? And I knew what they meant,
right,
which is that they were being surrounded by people who were really just trying to be their friends because they were trying to make a deal.
Right.
And they suddenly couldn't navigate.
Well, suddenly you're dealing with others' agendas.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What was the question?
Well, we were just talking about what it's like to straddle those two different worlds and how you navigate that space. What's yours is yours and what's theirs is theirs. But there's still this, and you, I appreciate the fact you said you don't get envious because I think that would be hard. I mean, I experience envy driving around some of the nicer neighborhoods. I'm like, oh, I would like that one day, or oh, I would like that. And for you to, you know, you to go into those worlds, and then you made the comment you're being chased by poverty after you left this, you know, opportunity behind, if you will, and decided to go out on your own.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that as human beings, we all come into this life with our own issues and our own problems. And I know just from working side by side in these houses with these people that we're all the same.
Right.
We really are. And you know, I got to tell you, the last 4 years have been really difficult in building my business.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen both sides where people literally, they had so much money that they couldn't even conceptualize a need. There was no need. But as human beings, we need so much more than physical, materialistic things.
Right.
We're not fed by money alone.
Right.
And what happens is that money can isolate you. So, you know, what I could say to your listeners is that you may be in need, but understand that those that have a lot also have their own needs and wants. And it's not they have and we don't. You know, that's the only thing I can say is that, you know, everybody has their own issues.
That's a very good point. We're going to take a break with that. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about what it takes to build a business, because this is very important for all of us to know. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show. This is Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment and follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, or just send us your comments. We would love to hear from you.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hello, welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show. We are talking with Teresa Lee. She is a household manager for the Uber Wealthy. And we are talking about, well, we just finished talking about some of the differences between the Uber rich and the rest of us. And while there are some, it, as Teresa's point was, we all kind of have our things that we need to be dealing with. So, Teresa, you walk into these homes and you realize that these people have similar needs to the rest of us, or how are their needs different?
How are they different? They have trouble identifying sometimes who is genuine.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of us, you know, can struggle with that. And to you know, what's really odd sometimes is that they forget that they have the ability to pay well. So I spend a lot of my time getting them to the place to pay a livable wage. And what I tell them is that you should be paying 20 to 30% over market, because working inside of a home, and I never say your home, but a home, is extremely difficult and very emotionally taxing.
And no, you would never say your home.
No,
in other people's homes. of similar quality.
Exactly. So I think that it's hard to sometimes to get them to hear that. You know, they may have come out of want situations themselves. And so, you know, they feel like, well, you know, I would have worked for less, which I tell them is really not the point. The point is that we should take care of them and give them a good livable wage. And generally, I can get them herded in the right direction, but sometimes it's like herding cats and they, you know, they don't listen. But, you know, I'm good at my job and being soft, and if they don't hear me the first time, second, third, sometimes, you know, they'll come around. You know, it's like making sure that their employees all have insurance. I've been able to convince many of my families to set up a SEEP IRA for staff. So every year that they're there, they contribute, which, believe it or not, a lot of very wealthy families never even think about doing.
Oh, wow.
Basically because nobody's pitching in the employee's best interest.
Yeah.
But, you know, my goal is to be able to sleep at night knowing that if we bring someone into a job, that they've got the best job with the best benefits and that we've spoken well on their behalf. And so we're able to place people in jobs all across the United States. We have clients, you know, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Denver, Minneapolis, Chicago, Miami, or Dallas, Boston, New York. Yeah, they're all over the place.
They are. So let's talk about you and your business. Because this is not – clearly you have had to network, which is going back to something we were talking about earlier. So how do you network and how do you get this to happen? Because it's not like in this day and age you can walk up to their doors anymore and just knock on them and say, hey, what do you need?
Well, I don't think I would be afraid to do that. You know, I think you have to use a little finesse. But I think that how I started this business was truly, really out of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that I was poor, poor. It's like, I can't feed my dogs today, poor. But I never really gave up the ability to think through the problem or to say, okay, darn it. What is the solution? Because college taught me that mm-hmm. there was a solution. And if I was saying there's not a solution, well, then apparently I haven't found it. So to answer your question is that I was trying to find a job because I didn't take the job with Mr. Kimsey. And I was like, well, drats, you know, not on the Hades am I going to do. And so I thought, well, where are all the wealthy people in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area? Where are they? Well, you know, I don't know about you, but there's not like a hotline list for the wealthy. So I started reading, and I reached out to some developers through the developer relationships. They actually did introductions to builders. Now, let me just go back and say that if you are going and you're asking for help to somebody that you don't know, don't lie. Don't do that.
It's tempting. It really is tempting. I've seen that happen a lot of times. Or if you're trying to sell somebody or get them on your side, don't lie. Don't lie about how much money you make. Don't lie about how much money they can make working with you. It just, Anyway.
Doesn't work.
It's one of my pet peeves. I think that's bearing false witness. But anyway.
Well, I tell you what worked for me is I asked for help.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I need your help. And I was really honest. And I said, this is what I do. And I'm trying to find a job. I'm trying to connect. I'm trying to figure this out. People were so taken aback by the fact I would say, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And if they would say, come back tomorrow, guess what? I'd come back tomorrow. If they said, call me at 5, I'd call them at 5. I never put the work on them to help me.
Right.
I would always follow up. I kept a meticulous notebook about who I spoke to and who knew who. And I took notes during the times that I was there. I was on it. And I think that they appreciated that. And through those relationships, I connected with a builder. And the builder literally walked me to my first client's house. He did. And maybe he took pity on me. I don't know. But he did. And I was able to, you know, do a little work for him. And I managed to feed myself. And through that, it enabled me to put one foot in front of the other and to develop this business so that I could, you know, feed myself.
And your dogs.
And my dogs, yes. Yes.
So how, and just to talk about your story a minute, the startup time for any business tends to be between 1 and 3 years. That's a hysterical laugh, in case you were wondering. Did you want to comment on that?
Well, I think that what I want to teach and give is that if you believe in yourself and believe in what you're doing— surround yourself by people who give you good counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes your friends do not give you good counsel.
Right.
So you
Even
though they mean well, you should always surround yourself with people who know more than you do, because it challenges you to think outside of your...
And successful people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they think differently.
Yes. And I would always ask people, what do you think? How can I make this better? I was open and available to being flexible and twisting and turning and moving and ducking, however it was needed. And because when I first started, what I was planning on doing is 360 degrees from where I am now.
That is very true. And a lot of small business owners that I know have found that. They start out with one, and often they still accomplish whatever it was they set out to do, but it's many layers beneath what they're actually doing, or their time's just divvied up so differently.
Very true. I can remember when I went after, and I actively went after working with the MBA,
mm-hmm.
and I spent, I think, maybe 2 years of my time and my own money courting the MBA and actually getting in, having a relationship with the MBA and the MBA, the union that serves the NBA, which is what I lost.
Didn't even know the NBA had a union.
Yeah, they do have a union. And you know, we got approval, and I actually spoke twice to the NBA rookie camp, was invited. And it's a huge honor to be in front of all of the new NBA rookies and teaching, because, you know, I was talking to them about risk issues, about having people in your home. And if you are a basketball or a football fan, you'll see, you know, that those young men don't always make the best decisions.
Yeah.
And so, but I courted them for 2 years and put so much energy and passion into feeling like, oh my gosh, I can really help them. I can teach them and nurture them so that they don't make these bad decisions. Guess what? Didn't work.
So that's 2 years of your life and your resources down the drain?
I would say
you learn some. Come on, give me a bone here. Well, I hate to think anyone has 2 years of a. But
well, I still had things going on the side. But honestly, I would go to bed at night. And I was like, oh my God, this is it. You know, I'm at the NBA. I'm speaking. Look at me. You know, they're filming, and where it's like you have this one on one with these players, and I'm being invited. It's like, oh my God, this is it. You know, you land a couple of players. You know, I'm on easy street. Wrong.
Yeah. Wait, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to learn more about this MBA journey. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. Please take a moment and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
You're listening to The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra with The Art of Potential Show. If you have a moment, please be sure to follow us on Twitter at Art of Potential and like us on Facebook. We are talking with Teresa Lee. Teresa, you were just telling us about how you had the NBA in the palm of your hand. And then what happened?
Well, the NFL called.
Whoa.
Yeah, the NFL called and said, Teresa Lee, we heard this work that you're doing with the NBA and the NBA Players Association, and we'd like to invite you over to our Fifth Avenue office and have you come up and talk to us. It's like, ooh, life is good.
Yeah.
So I went up and I had a meeting with them. It was really great. And they said, we heard what you're doing and you're a great speaker, and we just thought that you could write something for the NFL players. It's called second tier, which means they've gone through their rookie year. They've signed their first major contract, and this is where they tend to get themselves into trouble. And we want you to help us write a class that every NFL player has to take, and we're going to work with you to design it, but we want you to write it. So I did. You know, I spent, I don't know, 3-4 months writing this. And I went back up to New York City on my own ticket and, you know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then it went nowhere. And I called my contact with the NFL. They said, well, you know, a lot of hem-hawing around and back and forth and back and forth. And you know, at some point when poverty comes and tugs on your skirt, you kind of have to, as my father says, you kind of have to cut bait and move on.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I never landed an NBA player, and I never landed an NFL player, even though that I was actually a guest speaker at the Sports Agent Symposium in New York City, and you would think as a room full of sports agents that you would land a couple of clients. Well, it didn't happen. And I think it's like somehow out in the universe was saying, no, don't go left, go right.
Yeah, but left is calling, and when your phone is ringing, you tend to pick it up.
That's true. And I think that I will tell you, it rocked me for a really long time because I manage a lot with my gut, and it's like, how do I feel? I feel really good about this. And I walked, talked, and breathed the NBA and the NFL for those 2 years.
Right.
That's all I did because I thought, oh, this is great. You know, I'm in.
Right.
It would take hundreds of thousands of dollars from a PR firm just to get a meeting with the people that I could call up and say, do you guys want to go and have some coffee?
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't turn didn't turn into anything. And so I didn't get caught up in the loss. Because it's like, okay, well, now you're just going to have to duck and weave, and you're going to have to feed yourself, and you're going to have to move on. And so now what are you going to do? And I think that my takeaway from that is that for the longest time, I never put that information on my company website. I don't know what, you know, I just, for whatever reason, I just didn't. And then, you know, I just was like, well, you know, I'm going to put it up. I'm going to put it on my website, on our media page, that I was a speaker.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it, you know. And I got a lot of feedback from a lot of the wealthier men that I do business with. He's like, you know, Trista, I never knew that you spoke at the NBA. So I think that was maybe my takeaway from that. I learned a lot. It hasn't necessarily served me with my uber wealthy clients because it's definitely a different mindset.
I would think it would be a different mindset. And sure. I do actually want to talk about that a minute because the NBA and the NFL, with the exception of a few players like Michael Jordan, for example, who have been able to take their exceptional careers and turn them into exceptional wealth, a lot of people end up being flashes in the pan. And the money ends up flashing in the pan. Granted, if the money flashed in my pan, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying. But it is a mindset. So what is the mindset of the uber wealthy? What's something you've noticed about that? Because you're very intuitive with people.
Well, I think that the outline that I wrote for the NFL was called The Millionaire's Secret Handshake. And I wrote that for them because what they realized is that the circles that I was moving through with the uber wealthy was different than the circles of professional athletes.
Yeah.
And their question was the same as yours. What's the difference?
Right.
And so when I wrote it, what I realized was is that the uber wealthy surround themselves in a very tight circle of advisors, of people who they may not necessarily socialize with, but they're the best, and that they use their counsel to navigate through things. And they use educational resources. They're networking on a different level, and they use companies and advisors who are simply the best at what they do. And they don't take no for an answer. They will seek out those companies and those advisors, and that's what separates them. And they don't necessarily believe everything. Like one of the examples that I was using when I was talking to the NFL is that, like, auctions. When you go to an auction, a lot of times sports players will want to have a tangible asset. It's not unlike I'm singling out, you know, sports players, but many people want sometimes to have a physical asset.
Like a car or like a house.
A painting. Yeah. So what the uber wealthy understand is that you have to have your house in order, your financial house in order. You have to have your investment secure. All of that has to be really rock solid before you begin to externalize your wealth. And that's by, like, buying a yacht or buying a painting, or that's externalizing wealth. And they do it surrounded, like, even at Christie's or Sotheby's or any of the auction houses in New York, they have advisors, and all of the clients that I have their own advisors who will work with them to navigate through making any purchase at any price point, because they know how important that particular purchase is. But they don't move forward until they have their house in order. And that's that's a big difference, because they don't feel the need. And I'm completely generalizing because I only have my own experiences. But the clients that I work with, don't feel the need to externalize. Most of them, if you met them today, you would not even know that they're as wealthy as they are. But it's not to say that they don't make those purchases, but I know all of them have advisors that they reach out to say, okay, where should I go? Or how do I get that authenticated? Or where's my certificate? Or they're surrounded by the best.
And I think that brings up a really interesting point, that people who don't necessarily have their houses in order are often the ones who have the most flashy or externalizations of wealth. And I was curious about that. One of the first people that I've actually read about noticing that was Nietzsche in Germany. And I thought that was just fascinating. It was, you know, he was noticing kind of some of the poorer folks in Germany had some of the trappings of wealth, if you will. And it sounds like what you're saying is the people aren't trapped by their wealth. They're using their wealth to do whatever. But it's not a trap for them. It's a freedom for them.
Yeah, with my clients, it is. Right. I mean, they learn to navigate through that. But, you know, I was just talking to a wealth manager the other day, and he probably has $7, $8 billion under management. Mm-hmm. And he told me that all his new money clients have to trip and fall a couple of times by bad investments and bad relationships before they learn to shore up and close the door of letting people just kind of come and go and pitch ideas to them. He said what happens is they enjoy the attention in the beginning. Mm-hmm. They love it. But then they learn really quickly after they lose, you know, $5, $10 million in bad business deals that maybe that's not the right thing to do. And they will turn to him and pull those advisors in really closely and use them for what they're good for, is to help them to navigate to keep their wealth as opposed to giving it away.
Wow. Well, unfortunately, our show is coming to an end, and this has been so enlightening and so informative. Thank you for listening. This has been the Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra, and you know what I'm going to ask you. Please take a moment, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter.
If it's happening in our Chapel Hill Carborough community, you will hear about it on 97.9 FM, WCHL, and you'll find it on our website, chapelboro.com.